This is all right. Yeah. Say that again, Jerry. That was killer.
We can save all that other stuff for later. Right now, we got to talk about getting a radio station. That's it.
We got to talk about our presentation, which means we got to talk about who is involved. Like, where's Larry?
We have to talk about the possible sources of stations. Like, it's most likely that we'll have to start with one that isn't as desirable, or that maybe is totally un-rock, totally un, you know, sort of been classical up to now. And it, like, for instance, in Ann Arbor, WPAG, WAAM, WAAM's new ownership should be contacted. John Sinclair.
That's the new owner.
His station's name John Sinclair.
I read that in Ann Arbor News. Yeah, my attention just flipped out.
It's a good facility. The facilities are beautiful.
Do they have
Which one
does
this be?
Huh? They have an
no, I don't think they do. I don't know. So we should write down possibilities so we know off the top of our WAAM. That's AM.
Can I mention something?
Certainly.
I think it's... Well, what are the total number of things that we're going to have to get into today, right? We're going to have to figure out what kind of a form will be taken by the organization that makes the presentation.
Right.
We're going to have to determine what the presentation will be and who it will be presented to.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, which one should be taken first?
We probably talked about...
Then we got to have a presentation before we determine who we present it to.
Oh, yeah. We could just talk about the state of affairs briefly.
Okay.
Have you done any stations. Investigating into that since our last talk?
Just what I know off the top of my head. I don't know specifically about Detroit stations other than ones that are traditionally rock and roll or FM, you know. In Ann Arbor, I know a little more. I know WPAG is AM and FM.
How are they doing?
Nothing special, just like they've always done. They probably eke out a little profit, you know. But their FM, they make some really feeble attempts at being hip from time to time. They have, like, Ray Schley do a What's Happening thing twice a week, you know. And that's about it.
They used to have this guy Bob
It's not all
Greenwood.
Progressive at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's real weird. You know, WPAG, you could find the right people to approach there. WAAM, I could find the right people to approach there. Maybe I could even get a straight. Who's the woman out there that consistently is on the radio, you know?
On the what?
Rather large, does a special show in the mornings usually.
On what station?
WAAM, she's been out for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a morning show?
Yeah, 15 minutes only.
You know,
15 minutes a day interviewing somebody in the community and the
topic. Yeah, I've heard of that.
But what do we want? Do we want an AM station or an FM station?
Well, I think, you know, you ideally want AM, FM, 50,000 watts.
Sure.
Short of that, you want anything you can get.
You know,
right, with the television.
I would think in terms of FM first.
Yeah, but
why?
I would not.
Well, there's the arguments both ways. There's the audience, you get more audience with AM, but with FM you get, you know, there's the quality of the sound and the whole fact that that's what people are used to, you know.
I'd say this, as far as quality of sound is concerned, 95% of the people that are listening aren't into the quality of sound. If they're listening to the radio, they're getting the typical radio speaker, which is like that, which is very limited. And for the audience you would pick up, for instance, in Ann Arbor, Ann Arbor is a little unique because it has 80% of the people in Ann Arbor have FM radios.
It's over that percent in Detroit.
It is, huh?
Yeah. Detroit's the highest in the country of the top cities. Phoenix is second.
Really?
Yeah, Detroit's got close surprising. To 90% what they call FM penetration.
That's surprising. I don't know if Wham has a...
Hey, Bill?
Yeah?
You call up WAAM in the next couple minutes and see if they have an FM band? WAAM.
PAG has a good signal.
Yeah.
Their AM shoots out quite a ways, but only goes till 6 o'clock at night. Their FM can go all the time.
PAG has an FM?
Yeah. They weren't using it for a long time.
Are they using it now?
Yeah. They sort of tried. They did what they. I don't never listen to it actually.
What about WEAM? That has an FM component, doesn't it?
I don't know. He's gonna call and find out. And then there's WNRZ, which is they have two separate licenses, same ownership, but two separate licenses. It's not really just an AM and FM. One's the FM and one's the AM out of the same building. I talked to Lou Scally is, and he's probably pretty familiar with that situation. But I made a presentation to him before when they changed ownership. The station was losing $70,000 a year. Has been, but still the value of the station was going up. So this guy from Youngstown, Ohio. Why?
Yeah.
Because there are no more bands left, you know, there are only so many you can fit in the dial.
In the house on it, it dilapidates more each year, so the property value goes up.
Value of this band goes up.
Having a piece of land with a house on it, and if the house deteriorates,
It's like that.
The value goes up because the land.
There's a limited number of stations that are all, there will never be any more stations than what there are now.
Under this government. Right.
So Luke Scally's the guy in charge of others. He's from Youngstown, Ohio. He's pretty straight. He's very, you know, he's getting up to 50 years old, and the idea of doing something radically different that appeals to youth, you know, flips him right out. He's pretty set in his ways, and he's got it showing a problem, but he isn't happy with it. I know he isn't, because I know he's going through lots of problems all the time. Huh?
Still losing money?
No.
He
changed the AM to Country and Western, and he changed, they were both simulcast before.
Right.
And the FM is progressive.
Country and Western is big in this area.
He pays terribly, so I know he's just, it's close.
But he's breaking even, maybe.
Yeah, he's breaking even. I call him up.
No FM.
Okay. I called him up and
thanks, Bill.
Well, I made that presentation to him before, and he was going to give me 12 hours, and then he blew it, or I blew it. We both blew it. He didn't have any more guts. Right? He changed his mind. They have stopped broadcasting from 12 o'clock on again. And that's only because of they wanted to reduce costs, and they didn't have advertising, obviously.
We might be able to.
There's some pressure that can be exerted there too. We're one of their largest advertisers on Daystar, one of probably the top five. We may pull all together.
Out of sight, really.
We're considering pulling all together as we get our other advertising techniques more down and more together. We may just go with a grade poster distribution thing and drop that particular advertising. To do radio, probably do it on ABS, Detroit, something like that.
Or we could use it as a club.
As a club, yeah. We could put more on if it would work.
The station were more to our liking.
Mm-hmm. So there's a possibility there of going again and getting. We can do that one of two ways. One of three ways. Say, for instance, the station was to our liking.
Get them all kinds of advertising.
Good. Well, that's the whole idea. I called him up again and I said to him, look, we're having a radio meeting. Or, you know, I just briefly ran it down to him. And I said, would you be interested in another presentation? And he said, yeah. He said, well, and his whole attitude was I was coming from the anti-establishment type of thing because I think he just read The Sun about WRIF.
Yeah, right.
Because I said, no, I'm not talking about the WRIF scam. I'm talking about making you money.
Right.
You know, and
the only way to cut into it.
I said, I'm talking about doing radio so good. I said, have you ever known me that I didn't want to make money? You know, I said that to him. He said, no. And I said, well, okay then. And I said, we're just talking about doing really good radio so we get more listeners and get more advertising. And I said all the things, because when I originally talked to him, I said, the park program is going to be great. You could broadcast live from there if we were doing the radio station.
Right.
University series is going to be great. And now we can look at a lot of these things and say, yeah, they're really great. You know, and here's your advertising.
You'll hear John Lennon?
Right. I threw that in. You know, I talked, the Lennon thing was great. You know, and they could have broadcast that live if we called them up and asked them. But they didn't deserve it.
Right.
No.
So
I heard that guy on the air one night.
Huh?
I heard Lou Skelly on the air one night. You know, they play NRZ over the earphones at Jackson now. That's another good reason to get it.
Really?
That when they took ABX off because of the secret messages that Julia Belcher and I were receiving over the radio, they took ABX off the hookup and put on, they switched, fucked around, they had WVIC for a couple of weeks from Lansing. No dudes complained and they got NRZ. That was about 6 months ago.
Hmm. That replaced ABX?
Yeah, maybe longer. Maybe it's been on almost a year now.
It's been longer.
I took ABX off last spring. Fall when I was in the hole.
It was last spring because I remember going on the radio and saying
hello to everybody. Was on somebody's show for my birthday when I was locked up in the fucking closet in the hospital. And I didn't get to hear it, but they knew about it because they mentioned it in letters and stuff like that. ABX. Did you hear us on ABX? You know, we were talking to you. Yeah. Whoop! They dosed it right off the air.
There's another possibility, by the way.
See, I like to do, you know, like if you get any state, get to inmates and get beamed in there, see, and do things like have a prisoner show at least one night a week during the time that it's on. You know, the students.
They used to do that on ABX, didn't they?
Well, they didn't even have it like that. They used to be more.
Didn't do much with it.
We tried to get these guys to say things that they would say once in a while, hi to the brothers in Jackson or something like that, you know. But this black station in Detroit, and I think it's the GPR, a brother named Bobby D, come on at 10 o'clock at night. They have the Uptight Show two nights a week, Monday and Friday. The Uptight Show for all the brothers in the Uptight Place. And it would just be the greatest radio show I've ever heard, because this whole thing was playing requests for prisoners, you know, like prisoners.
Letters that he got.
Wives and sisters and mothers and shit would call up and request tunes for their loved ones in there. And he would be just talking all this shit, see? And then dudes would request tunes for dudes in other blocks and shit like this. This is for Cool Breeze and Big Al and so and so and 12 Block, you know, from the Main Squeeze. It was just a killer, exciting show to listen to. You know? It was a real people's radio.
You see, thing, right? See?
Now the hip stations should do something like that, you know what I mean?
Sure.
And they run that over the hookup, the black men made sure they run it over the hookup because it was so hip, you know, they got them to put it on.
What you better do is relate that to the ownership of a station in terms of dollars, show him
exactly.
By doing something like that. You're going to have all these, just first of all, you got to convince him Ann Arbor's
totally
unique.
We don't need to talk to him about stuff like that, you know, from the wire. And from the wire, you just
right,
talk to
from
him
the
about
wire,
getting
the
money.
Get
yeah, then
when
you
say,
start
look,
getting, when you get the gig,
you
then
can
you
explain those things easily to them. The whole community is now hip to your station because you're doing something, you know, and they're all listening in. You have to,
and they're kicking their dollars down to the store and spending them on your
because
spots.
They're hearing, yeah, that's right. Your station.
All community listens to this station.
Relevant community radio. The main thing is making them see. He never goes into Ann Arbor. He doesn't even know what it looks like. He doesn't know if those. He doesn't know how many freaks there are here in comparison to Youngstown, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know why.
Does he
it's
stay
so
in
unique.
The Youngstown? Stay in Saline.
Yeah, he stays out around, stays in something like Dell or something, and his family still lives in Youngstown.
Invite him to the Jefferson Airplane concert.
No, what we'd have to do is just take him around to one of them concerts,
right.
The Commander's concert. All right,
no, Jefferson Airplane concert, much better.
You think so?
Yeah.
It's
more spectacular.
The Commander will be packed, won't it?
Yeah,
the
Soul Airplane, that's, airplane will be packed with 11,000.
What I was thinking was just to show how Commander's from here, you know. I mean, that would be really stunning to me. I don't know, maybe I'm looking at the wrong angle. I mean, you'd expect a place to be packed for Commander, for Jefferson Airplane, you know. Commander, 4 years ago, was playing around the fucking fraternities and shit, you know, with the MC5.
Hey, can I mention another station?
The Rationals and the SRC and everybody else. It was
Chosen Few.
Chosen Few.
150 of Night. Killer fraternity job.
Hey, listen, write down WKNR.
Sure.
You
think we can get next to Van Patrick?
Well,
I'd be willing to give it a try.
I think that he's the one. I just got a word, now I don't know if it's reliable or not, but I was talking to Beltair over at CJOM in Windsor. And
Beltair over there now?
Yeah. He said that Keener, well, I heard 3 months ago that there were $6 million in debt. Okay.
Stereo Island ain't doing it, though.
No, and neither is the AM. That's the point. See, they're in desperate trouble.
The AM ain't doing it either?
No, AM is sucking shit like a dog.
Really?
Yeah, it's really bad.
Better AM than CK.
Riff, give you an idea. Riff Sky took a bomb in the last ratings. Really went down. Mm-hmm. And we still beat Keener AM.
Kids,
we're told,
really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, they're really in bad
shape. Listenership?
I'm told that the only cash money that was actually laid out in the deal to buy the station from Nellie Knorr was paid out by Van Patrick. The other cat is the guy who owns a station in Boston, New York, or something.
So the station's
Gennetti, Genunzio, something like that. And he, you know, through contract finagling and so on, didn't actually lay out any cash. So Van's got, you know, the pressure on him.
Yeah.
But Mark said that he heard somewhere that they were now in receivership and they're owned by a bank.
No shit.
And
that ain't good.
Which means that they're probably desperate.
You can go into the bank and convince them that you can handle the station, you can run it and make it show a profit, and they can put you in charge of the receivership.
You need a hell of a front man to do that.
No,
that's right.
You
are
any
of us
going to
walk into a bank and convince them that...
I would rather work from the other end.
I'd walk into the bank and talk to them.
I had this problem. My frame of reference is still 1969, so I really don't know. I shouldn't.
I think we're at the stage now, John, where they're getting to the point where they know that you can look pretty weird and still have a bankroll.
Right. They are, right. See? And that's getting across.
They're beginning to understand that, so they don't automatically write you off. If I can get a fucking mortgage with this,
yeah.
You know.
I could get $50,000 together for WKNR from just dealer backers. I have $30,000 backing for shows right now. And that's just, you can find it. There are more since 69. A lot of kids are getting rich.
Yeah.
22, 23 years old.
And the other thing is that they're understanding that, you know. I mean, I used to remember the show I used to have, you know, and we were here
one thing you got to keep in mind. One thing you got to keep in mind, you know, when you're talking about this,
you know, very leery,
is that you can't sell a radio station. There's no way you can control the financial interest of it. All you can do is, you know what I mean, because you have to go through the FCC. There's a long investigation into your background and so on before you can own a station.
So
you have to negotiate or wrap from the point of view of just getting a contract to program the station.
Now, I'm not clear on whether there's a law against having a contract to program a station. Isn't the owner responsible for all the programming? He must program it. He can't have contracts.
What goes on the air is entirely up to him. He can do whatever he wants.
He can pay me
$50,000 a year to do nothing but sit at a desk and make sure that the station makes money. No. He is always the sole responsible individual for what goes on the air.
That's where
you can never get that away. You cannot sell a license.
Right.
If I had $50 million in my pocket right now, I could not buy a radio station.
Wow.
You can buy it right now.
Just by saying, hey,
you have to go before
in other words,
I'd
tell the FCC and they'd have to okay.
I'd
probably have to bring a court case against them.
Well, what would happen is they would look into your political background or the nature of your hair. And then say, I'm sorry, but I won't sell it to you.
They decide if you're going to really represent
those stations.
Right.
So the drag about the owner being responsible is that you have that totally uptight relationship all throughout. The correct terms, David.
Yeah, if you make him more
money. It's like with a club owner, you know.
Oh, it can be done.
See,
it's
I
the kind of relationship with a club owner. You can go in, no matter how much he hates you or anything like that, you can go in and make him money and you be cordial to him and this and that, he's going to be pissed off and shit, but there ain't nothing you can do about it. You got a contract, you know, and you're discharging your obligation, and he's making money. He might sit at home and fume or something, you know, as I'm sure Gabe Lance used to do.
Right.
There ain't nothing.
I don't think there's
Gabe
more
that has loved it through and through.
Yeah.
I don't think he's fumed once at home. I don't think Blue Scally or any station owner would fume. I think they would just try and figure out ways they can put up with it, as long as it's not saying...
Well, Glantz used to fume because we used to constantly be publicly attacking him and shit, while at the same time working in his joint, you know?
Right.
The thing that's different...
Call him a greedy head and a, you know, a greasy motherfucker and shit. So he was faced with an insuperable contradiction, you know? And he was also pissed off because we were demanding 50% of the gate and not $125 anymore and shit like that.
Right, he figured people's paying him for free forever.
Right. Yeah, we got him for $125 for 2 years. Jesus Christ, though. Why should we have to pay him $1,100, you know?
You didn't call over WKR, did you?
No.
The thing is, there's another station owner is going to have pressure from another source, like the government, to come down on the content of the radio station.
I don't know.
Yeah, what's
your? I don't believe in that.
I think that's
total bullshit.
It's not total now.
Not total.
Just in general, they aren't going to do it.
What has
we're
the government
involved
come
in
down
this.
For in the past?
The government is going to be very. I mean, look at this, Jerry. In 1970, the FBI sent out a memo to FM stations in this area saying the White Panther Party had had a meeting at which they resolved to attempt to infiltrate FM station, radio stations in this area, you see, and be on your guard because these are dangerous subversives and shit like that, you know? I mean, so that's just, we had already infiltrated so deeply that we say that.
All right, let me put it this way then. I don't think
they're interested in us.
The fear you have should be such that you should worry about it. I mean, just as long as you're conscious of that thing hovering over you,
you don't do anything wrong.
That,
but the fact remains.
Fuck it. But it's not something that's a major problem as long as you're conscious of it. Then.
But the fact remains that in this particular, I would agree with you that generally, that's a lot of paranoia, you know. The fact remains that in this particular instance, and I don't think it would be a paranoid or self-aggrandizing or anything.
One of
America's
great public enemies is
involved. Of what's going on in this area and the fact that there's people who are involved with masses of people, you know, who have a mass base of people out there that relate to them, you know, who are also involved in revolutionary work, you know. I think they're aware of this, and I think that this area is something. So we can't say that totally that isn't going to be a problem, but it won't be. We can deal with it. It's a problem that can be dealt with.
Right.
You know, and they're going to be more alarmed as they see people with consciousness going into stuff and trying to transform it. You know, they aren't going to stand by. I don't believe.
Well, no. All of this,
Jerry, to see is how long they're going to stand by, how much we...
But, I mean, whatever they're going to do is something we can deal with, you know, that's all they say.
That's one of the reasons why I keep thinking that it's important to keep in mind what I was saying in the house before about the station being pretty much straightforward, ass-kicking rock, not into anything super heavy politically, and et cetera like that, you know, until you develop a certain degree of popularity.
Until you develop a mass base, so if they come down and crush you, try to crush you, the people, well, it'll be a big thing, you know, and then they can be defeated. Right?
And like what I say is, as tight as this, for at least 4 to 6 months, and then, you know, just... Right. And then start loosening up a little here, a little there, you know.
Yeah.
The educational process.
My interest is just that we don't go into this with any delusions about it. I just want to be completely upfront about that, you know. I mean, I could not say nothing, you know, but it's a reality, you know. I mean, I just...
And you'd almost have to...
Penitentiary for two joints of weed, you know, they are bullshit, see.
Yeah.
You know, and the reason for that was because we were, you know, in the rock and roll business, you know.
Right.
Hey, listen, there's another approach, by the way, economically to this whole thing. Pete said that, well, Pete, you mentioned a little while ago, and I kind of dropped it. But, you know, you can do it two ways. You can go up to the owner of a station and have him sign a contract for programming purposes, okay? That's it. We'll take so much of your gross for this, and here's what we're going to do for it. Or you can go up to him and say, look, I'll give you $250 a day if you'll give me 6 to midnight. I'll give you five, or you know, or whatever the figure
is.
I'll give you $500 a day for
more than he's making.
Noon to midnight.
How much did it, okay, I this is
surprisingly cheap
idea. How much does Riff take in advertising for a 6-hour period like that?
I don't know, but I can tell you this, that my last month, I mean, just before I left ABX, I saw the tally sheet, and their gross for that month, which would have been July or August of 68, was $30,000 for the whole month.
For the whole month here, when they were in real trouble and changing ownership, the gross was like 11, 12, 13,000. AM and FM broadcasting together. That wasn't paying the bills. The bills were about $15,000 total, everything, you know, whole budget of the stations.
No.
They had about $30,000 in receivables
because
their salesman hadn't collected money. And he must have it up to 20. He must have it up to 22,000 or 20. He probably has it around between 15,000 and 20,000.
That's right, the salaries and.
He's probably making about a
upkeep and all that.
Little profit each month, or he wouldn't stick with it. He must have made. He's the kind of owner who keeps the DJs and everything at rock bottom as far as he can do it. And since he feels, you know, you can go with any DJ, you know, because he doesn't know more than that.
Just get anybody who works
in
the
for 6 months.
How much? 125 a week or something like that?
They're lucky.
No
shit. Yeah, probably 800 a week.
No shit.
75.
These are things I don't really have any idea.
Yeah.
That's fine. So like $250 worth of advertising for a 6-hour period would be a nice chunk, is that right? $500, $1,000?
All right, let's say that you pulled in.
How much do they charge for an ad?
Well, $5 for NRZ here, they charge like $5. It's like the cheapest. They try and get you for 10.
10, what do you get for 10? A 60-second spot?
Yeah.
One.
$5 if you take a bunch, you get
Jesus.
That's incredibly cheap.
Yeah.
Cheap? No, that's expensive.
Is it? But I mean,
yeah.
I would have thought.
If you buy in quantity, you can get ads on ABX for $10.
Oh, yeah.
Shit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, you can get them on RIF. I never paid more than $5 on RIF.
Yeah. Hey,
no shit.
Hey, the most popular radio program in the entire city is J.P. McCarthy on JR.
Yeah.
He gets like, on his show, they pay like $180 a minute.
Yeah, it's a vast difference.
The next guy is Dick Purton at Wixie, and he pulls in about $120. They're the two top. Below that, man.
K70.
You're so awful.
Well, that's another story.
Century, they're just so fucking awful. J.P. McCarthy. I mean, I tune into him because he's so big. I read about
it
in the paper.
Somebody,
shit.
Right.
Tune into him, they're just awful.
Yeah.
The records aren't bad.
Anyway, let's put it this way.
Blood, sweat, and tears and all that. Chicago and Judy Collins and Joan Baez.
John, if you had, let's say you were selling ads for an average figure of $5 a piece, and let's say you wanted to limit yourself to 7 commercials an hour, just so it doesn't become really bullshit, that's $35 an hour.
30-second spots?
There's 60.
Really?
Yeah.
Woo!
Okay.
You get 30.
That's $35 an hour. So 10 hours would be $350, $700. You're making about $800 a day that way.
Gross.
Is that enough?
I don't know. Project that over a year. Let's say 400. That'd be $320,000.
$320,000 a month. Is that what that is?
That'd be $300,000 a year.
No. How much a day? How much a day?
800.
Figure 800 a day.
800
a day. How much is this at your spot set?
That's
$24,000
a month.
That's at
$5. That's $24,000 a month.
Yeah. So it's about $300,000 a year.
Okay, now when you figure out if you have a percentage of that, say you have a station that's doing $400,000 a year, if you have a percentage, say you have 25% of the gross,
$288,000
is $100,000, you know,
quarter of a million
in your
dollars.
Budget for what you're talking about, which maybe you'd be, if you had 25% of the gross, out of that you take care of the salaries of personnel and you take care of advertising, like he'd have to take care of the rest out of his, something like that. And so your expenses wouldn't run more than 40,000, I don't think. 50. No, they'd run 50.
50 or what?
50,000.
A month?
No, a year. You see, you can approach them and say like, okay, we'll take a percentage of your gross, and out of that, we'll pay the salaries of employees.
Pete, I think you're wrong.
Think I'm low?
Yeah, because you got an awful lot of people. You're gonna have to pay people on the air, and pay news people, right? And you're probably gonna have to have some office people involved of your own choosing.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I still think it could probably be done for close.
Super Sharon is the one. Do you know Super Sharon?
Sure.
Used to be G. Pollan's secretary. She types 150 words a minute.
Jesus.
She's the best office organizer I've ever seen.
What is she doing now?
50.
She lives in some commune out by Cass Lake or somewhere, by the end of Northwestern Highway, and the commune has a little Moroccan import shop out at Fire Mill Village.
You talk to her?
Oh, yeah.
She'd love to get doing something?
There are lots of good people.
She's brilliant.
I know.
Penny. I saw that even Penny in the house next door to you. I don't know that one. Penny Jeltis.
Mm-hmm.
He seems pretty good.
Yeah.
She's looking to do it all this far out.
Mm-hmm.
She's to do it. Working at Eden's, she makes $40 a week after production.
Walking all the time.
Working the hours.
She's a good worker.
So anyway, that's one possibility. If you can get some front money, you can just go up to them.
You
are
just selling commercials now, or all around the clock, are you?
No. That's, by the way, that's an important point to keep in mind. We're projecting this on a 24-hour basis, you know, which means that you either have to charge more per commercial during the day because you don't have as many at night, or you got to sell them at night.
Or you do both.
Probably right. That's.
I just flashed on a thing of having a special rate for a middle of the night commercial.
All right, that's fine. You know, but you got to keep all 24 hours earning money.
Averaging.
Yeah. Let's say
you didn't do 24 hours, the time you go off would be from 6 a.m. to 12 a.m.
Then you offer them complete production.
No, I'd go from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m.
Yeah.
Or 3 to 9.
You got to be on the moon.
But,
people go.
Yeah, 25%, say, of the gross of a station or whatever the percentage was, you'd probably have a sliding percentage to pay based on gross.
Right.
So if you hit what you actually thought you could hit, you'd be cleaning up. And he wouldn't think you would, but he'd be satisfied if you only.
He wouldn't
half
think you'd ever get that much. So
right.
The fuck.
I mean, he'd be satisfied because he'd be making a lot more. But if you said to him, okay, we're a nonprofit corporation and the profits of the corporation go into community affairs and events, so actually everyone in the community.
Is everybody
know,
into doing it that way?
Well, I think you could arrange it that way.
No
you
shit.
You pay salaries,
Jerry?
And everything. You pay salaries and everything, but the profits, and you could pay good salaries.
Sure you can.
You'll be good, but the profits would just go.
I don't get to be killer to say
what
that it was
mean,
a non-profit.
What it would mean
dynamite.
Is be the greatest PR lick of all time for a radio
right,
station.
That's
in
right.
Terms of everybody
really.
In the community would support it because
right.
They knew the profits were going, but then the owner would say, fuck, I got it made. They're running it. Their profits are going this. They're doing three times what I could do myself, and I'm making 10 times as
mm-hmm.
much because I got the 75 or the 50% of what's left.
By the way, that figure is probably closer to what you want.
Well, you've graduated on up, right? And you could get in a situation where you're making $500,000 gross off your percentage. Your station easily costs $1 million up.
Well, now wait a minute. You got to consider what station it's going to be and the potential for income. And to do that, to get a station that's going
to
make that much money,
even like keener,
ABX, as popular as it is probably in the $500,000 bracket, and they've got a metropolitan area of 3 million to draw from.
They aren't doing half of what they could be doing, though.
Well,
don't you agree?
Well, but they don't want to do that.
I know.
You know?
I know.
Right. They're doing what they want to do and pulling in good bread,
yeah.
Which is really far out. You know.
What I'm saying
if
is,
if you're talking about mass appeal, then on that level, is Ann Arbor the place to do it?
Well, you get
the question would be, this is a technical point. This is a technical point I want to get. Can you raise it? How do you get the power boost?
WNRZ FM in Ann Arbor has the ability. They legally have the right to apply for and get a 50,000 whatever it is watt. This is one thing I pointed out to Scally in our talks.
Well,
he flipped out during our meeting.
You don't need to be physically in Detroit. You need to penetrate the Detroit market is what you need, right?
Coming from Ann Arbor through Detroit.
Definitely.
You need to saturate the Detroit market. You don't need to physically be there.
That's right. You just take ads from there.
Yeah. And reach people.
Well, give you an idea of that. I didn't know about 50,000, but but ABX is 32, I think, and RIF is 26,000.
And ABX hits Ann Arbor very strong.
RIF is RIF
strong enough.
Since you boosted the power, shoots right into Jackson, and the penitentiary behind the walls comes in clear.
With 50,000 watts and a good antenna.
35.
That's how strong it is now.
Well, it costs $20,000 to do that. Now, there's where you could maybe convince. Like Lou Scally, if things were going well, you just said, okay, I will come up with $20,000 to put your new tower up. If you take the job of applying for and getting and doing what's necessary to get permission to have the boosted power, we'll pay for the thing as part of the deal. If we had a 2-year contract.
You can make that back.
Well, you know, you got your minimums and your maximums.
One big benefit.
benefits. You gotta have a different economic base than benefits.
Well, at the same time, you have to expand that base. So. Benefits haven't hardly started. Yeah. We've just been nurturing them here for 4 years. You know, they're just at the point where the John Lennon thing was the first benefit on the scale that they're supposed to be on. Mm-hmm. A year from now, there should be benefits like that all the time, you know, like once a month. When we get our shit together with these bands and get people into it, we should be able to do a benefit like that once a month, man, and raise like, and know how to do it and maximize the profits and raise like $30,000, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we're gonna net less than 10, you know, on that, on the John Lennon thing, you know, because no expense was spared. Everything was done at the last minute, and you paid top money for this and that and just, you know, spend all this money, but when you get used to doing it, you can maximize the profits, you know. They gross $41,000, you see. But you can net 30 out of that, if you did it right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there should be those like once a month. That's $360,000 a year, man. You know, to put into profit for seed capital. And all you need is seed capital. You get the seed capital, and then you can start generating your own money, you know, and start new projects which will generate money of their own, you know.
I like it.
If you got $20,000, you can do what Pete's doing, you know, put it in a concert series. And we should control all the Gabe Glantz and them shouldn't never do a concert in this area.
But you just need the money.
That's all you need.
Right.
Gabe, we should have it. Gabe Glantz and any of them people should never be able to produce a concert in this area. We should be producing it.
What is that, a New York concert?
No, Gabe Glantz is a local imperialist. You know, he's just a local
chump. He owns the Grandy Ballroom.
Owns the buildings. He's a slumlord, owns whole blocks. He owns the Grandy Ballroom and he bought the Easttown Ballroom.
Oh, nice.
He's just got all these buildings in this huge, he just got involved. He's been involved in this shit since the 50s, man. He used to have the Village Theater. That's one of his buildings. You know, in the Tantrum. Mm-hmm. That was another one he had, you know. I mean, he owned all the buildings. He's been involved in the Beatnik thing, exploiting that. And then the rock and roll thing came up in 66, and he owned the Grandy Ballroom. You know, Russ Gibb got the Grandy Ballroom, entered into agreement.
50% of all the
profit. Yeah, just for owning the building.
Mm-hmm.
Because Russ was desperate when he started. So he built up a lot of money that way. See, now he does all, then he moved in and slurped up the East Town, see? When that opened.
The Cobo Hall.
Right.
Now they're doing the Cobo Hall concert.
Just because.
See, I'd be interested in, Pete, is like seeing, I'm interested in talking to Bagheeras, you know? And I'm interested in driving Gabe Glantz out of the fucking music business completely.
Bob Garrison, here's his attitude. I talk with Bob all the time. We just have never been able to arrive at a basis.
I didn't ever realize that he was a freak, you know?
Oh, yeah.
See, that's what I
was. To arrive at a basis that would help what my intentions were and would help what his intentions were. It was like we never needed each other for what we were trying to do. And we had a disagreement in taste many occasions, but there were some groups that we could potentially cooperate on. At one time, we almost did a Leon Russell show together up here because he could get the group and he was willing to, and I couldn't get the group because he had
a pool, smoke?
And he was willing to back the show and guarantee us a couple thousand dollar profit, you know.
Yeah.
So he wants to work.
Yeah.
He wants
I saw him at Cobalhawn, he's just coming up to me and saying, I got to talk to you.
Then you should definitely take it. Charlie is a very good friend of Bob Aguirre's and originally got him the building.
Far
for the East Town, you know, he knew we wanted to run a place, and Charlie scanned around and found a place.
I mean, we could take somebody like that, and ice. I mean, this is a beyond the scope of the radio thing, particularly, but we could take somebody like that and isolate, drive a complete wedge between him and Glenn. That we have some money.
He hates wedge. He hates
Glenn. I know.
Glenn's.
I'm sure he does.
He's the reason he's expanding outside of Detroit is because Glenn's has got a territorial deal on it. He gets 50% of everything he does in Detroit.
Yeah.
He gets half of everything he does. I don't know, in a few years.
Why?
Not for how long?
Glance is hip to those things. When you got
Glance
somebody,
is a lawyer, too, see.
Yeah, when you got somebody that was $30,000 down, like Bagheeris was, and you're
lawyer
up here saying that.
Evidently, his father probably
runway down
had a bunch of buildings. He built an empire out of that with
a lot of money.
Father sent him to law school to be the one to probably, this is what I imagine. He took it over, his father said his father died, and probably expanded the whole empire.
That's probably a pretty valid image.
Yeah, he's a slimy, I know him well, I mean, he's a slimy motherfucker. He really is. But he just, because he can buy the building, then he can say to these guys, well, there ain't no other places you can use in town for a ballroom, you know. I own this place, and you give me half of everything you do, not only in this place, but we produce concerts together, and whatever you do, I got half of it. Or no building, you know. And the guy's in a shaky position, ain't got no capital, is scuffling, trying to get the start and all those
for it.
That's what
Gibbs
did.
ABX, I think, is 32. 32,
what is it called?
32,000
watts. So bad from there was one beautiful thing about the whole development of this rock and roll thing is you can see the development of capitalism
in a compressed
microscopic form. You see, I mean, it's like putting capital, the development, historical development of capitalism under a microscope, you know, and just looking at it. You know, they start out with a little independent thing, and then they have to go to the, you know, like you can start out with a dance in a hall that you can rent for $125. You can get $125, you know. By maybe a bunch of people putting primitive capitalism, you know,
yeah,
a bunch of people putting up a little money and getting a place.
How high above?
And then people start coming, so they want to take it to a higher level and get a bigger place. In order to have that, you have to have capital. They ain't got any. They have to go to the people that got the capital.
But there's
this getting these phony deals of 50% to them, and you do all the work and pay everybody and get 50%.
The signal goes out from the antenna this way.
And then another independent capitalist, you know, some of the capital emerges over here. See, like the East Town emerged over here.
Vertical polarization.
I try to tell Gibb, you know, I said, well, that ain't no threat to you. You know, we can have two ballrooms in the city and it'll be here.
So what you want is
you can just make yours better. If you make yours better, you're going to get the audience. There's a big enough audience who wouldn't want to hear that, see. Oh, we got to put them out of business, you know. And just start going to fantastic extremes, bringing in big acts, losing money on him, but making sure that he didn't make any money and lost money on his weekend, you know, because they had more money, see, so they could afford to fuck around, see.
That's all important. It's not.
Then when they got him going downhill,
critical,
they opened, took another building that Glantz owned, the Riviera Theater, right there on Grand River, right down a block from the Grandy. They opened that as a bigger place, bigger than the East Town. Start bringing big acts at cheap prices and shit.
Signal.
You got the guy desperate, and they moved in with a deal.
Then
they moved in with the deal. Well, why don't we do it all together? You know, you come in with us, give us 50% of your thing, and we'll shut down the Riviera and the Grandy, and you know.
Right. You save him from imminent doom.
Right, which they created. They put him on the brink of doom, and then they rescue him.
But then again,
for 50%.
He's been hurting the hell out of them, so, you know, they all figure we can't make it alone.
So then it goes through the point of peak, and then it starts to decline. You know, and it gets bigger and bigger with the ballrooms.
Make an appointment with Van Patrick.
Well, I think we got to get a presentation.
Eggs are getting more money. They have to do in Cobo Hall and maybe a stadium, so they're producing all those kinds.
As part of the presentation, we can figure out who's...
Now the Barlow has been closed down by the city. I mean, they just use the killer...
So it's Cobo Hall?
A short-sighted grab, like... Week after week, just packing the place way past capacity, and not, you know, the facilities are all deteriorating, and they don't put any money back into it.
Yeah.
And like big dope seller, marijuana sellers. And
I'll tell you one thing about Bagheeris, though. In all the dealings I had with him when I was managing, he's the most honest, forthright club owner I've ever come across. In that he would spend 20 minutes looking for you, wandering through the crowds to hand you a check.
Yeah.
And he would always say, if you want cash, come on back to the office within 5 minutes. Bagheeris.
That's all good to know.
He was honest like that. You know, he never hassled the band about their pay, you know.
That's all good to know.
He never came up to him and said, hey, man, you guys suck shit tonight. I don't think I'm going to pay you, you know.
Yeah.
Never did not even as a joke.
Tried to rust give ruses. And
yeah. He was always
tomorrow.
He was always good.
Good that way. It's always good.
See, I haven't never had any experience with him, you know, because he just emerged just before I got ripped off. The only experience I had with him was good. We were playing there for $1,100, two nights for $2,200. And the first night, Michael Davis got arrested over at that fucking campus corner drugstore for the sunglasses and shit. And they couldn't make the gig, and finally some of them came in late and jammed with Scott Morgan and Terry Treban and shit. He still gave us $275 because they were there for part of the evening. You know?
Who did this?
Bagheeris, when he first opened.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Wow. When you first open, you don't have to do that, right?
I know. I mean, I was just thinking about that. But then after that, all the stuff that I know about him, just what I've read in the papers and shit, you know, which hasn't been anywhere near.
Any promoter gets the same image every deal normally. Yeah. Just tries to deal with it. Although Bob, I don't think he artistically takes it very far out. Then again, he gets the attitude of, fuck it. I know I'm going to sell it 10 years after. I know Alice Cooper's going to sell out. I'm going to make $20,000 on that gig.
Why should I put on a second act that's any good?
Or not that, but why should I put on such and such a show in Masonic just so, you know, an artistic show when I can clean up over here? Mm. And I got enough work to do, so I'll just put on these kinds of shows and play it safe. That's what happened.
Yeah. Playing it unsafe would be this venture that, you know, you're not really as sure with Alice Coltrane as you are with some other acts, are you?
Oh, no. I'll be happy if it makes a problem. I don't know.
I mean, you probably felt pretty confident when you booked Jefferson Airplane.
Grateful Dead.
One day.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just thinking of that Grateful Dead concert, man.
Sell out.
My favorite reference is that, Grateful Dead, you'd be bringing them into Detroit. I remember Russ Gibb bringing them into Detroit the first time in 67 and losing money.
Beyond at the fairgrounds.
And other times bringing them in and worrying about breaking even and shit. You know, now you can bring them on the fucking college campus and during the exams, you know, and still have a big crowd, you know.
They're on the verge of being a super group.
Yeah, if they could play.
Well, what do you want to do? You know, you want to talk about what kind of a presentation to make, and we'll have to make adjustments for each station you present it to.
These ideas, just coming up with ideas about it. We might just do that for a while, talk about different ideas for the radio station,
because
that's going to end up part of the presentation.
What are we going to present to this cat? What will be the basic concept that we are in charge of programming?
Let's start with what we can put together. This. You know, what kind of package we can put together, and the form it would take. That's what I got to do.
All right.
I say we should be...
Before we get to the presentation or even to the particular station, you know, the first thing would be what type of organization is needed and who are we talking about specifically, you know?
Well, when you're dealing with radio, you're dealing with a lot of things. You're dealing with disc jockeys, news people,
program director.
Well, I'm talking, you know, it depends on how extensive you want to be.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the basic fundamentals are news people, announcers, you got to get production taken care of, promotion and publicity.
And traffic and advertising.
Well, now, do you want to do that? Now you can take
it
further.
That would seem to be an essential component, wouldn't it?
Well, then you could go in there with a blanket deal that you just handle everything.
That's the best way.
Everything across the board.
That's what I was thinking of.
Otherwise, we just buy
staff and everything.
All right, now, then are you going to handle things like traffic?
What is
traffic?
Uh-huh.
Trafficking of drugs, or what are you talking
about? No.
Traffic means, that's the department.
Traffic man.
When you sit there and you're on the air and you got the log in front of you, that's the people who know what ads go when, where, and why.
Yeah, you have a traffic manager who schedules all the ads and the PSAs and
all right, so then who are you going to get? Your own person or somebody who's already been doing it for a while, namely the people that are there now?
Well, ideally, you'd want your own, wouldn't you?
We'd want to
go in there, ideally, I would think, we'd want to go in there and just say, for such and such a percentage, we're going to run your station. Isn't that
ideal? I don't think you could have anyone that was other than someone that was very close to you doing that type of job.
Yeah, that's really important.
Ad placement things.
All right, so in other words, you're saying you'll provide the entire staff?
Yeah.
Would you,
we'll guarantee you that you make money, and then, isn't that the way you phrased it?
Yeah, it's just like these college shows, really. You're going in, but the school is not an expert enough in the affairs of youth tastes, or whatever you want to call it, to be able to handle concerts. Where else, the same thing on a radio station, you walk in and say, we're the youth experts, we know what the tastes are, and we can present those because we've got enough radio experience and stuff, and you triple your profits for a percentage of your gross, you know. That kind of approach, and then giving them the layout for it.
We would need
Wouldn't that be ideal, Jerry?
Staff or something like that. We need some kind of technical staff.
Technical staff.
Those would probably have to be people from the station already.
No.
No, you can get them.
Right, Jerry?
They're hard to get.
No, you can find competent engineering people.
See, they got to have a first class FCC license. And no matter how much they know. What?
You can get that.
Well, that's the point. They got to have that, and if they
got to
have specific knowledge of radio equipment, not just
either. Okay, let's put it this way, Jerry. Either or are there not like people who have these skills?
Skills are meaningless.
For stations and the license. I mean, who are working for stations?
Sure.
Who would rather work for this kind of station than that?
All right. Yeah.
We could recruit.
You run into one. I've run into two or three over the period of time when I was talking about that. We had some guy.
Right?
In fact,
freaks,
in fact,
you know,
I know who it is. I would like to move
in. Or even who are straight, but have a lot of straight people have tremendous creative ideas, engineers and people like
they
that.
They want to use that. I know exactly the cat it would be.
Yeah,
young guy is about 27, and
we could pirate other fucking stations and shit. You know.
Okay. Sure, you can put a lot of equipment on stations. You can be the leader in the country. You got to be making news on all fronts, from your engineering feats
that's
to your
PR
programming feats to your advertising feats.
That's your PR component.
Yeah. All right, then why don't we just make a list of the people you're going to have to have? Okay, you're going to have about 7 people on the air. Okay.
The second, we make it legal. 7 people.
Announcers.
Does that include things like 2-hour shows? And
that's
stuff
easy.
Like that?
No, no, that's your basic. You got to have 24 hours a day covered.
That's easy.
Okay.
That's the easiest part.
All right. Then you need
most important.
News department.
Well, we can get the best fucking radio on
the
air people in the country. You know,
with the right contract and with the right signal.
We know people in radio who would be dying to get into something like that, you know, even for, on a risk basis.
But if you laid the risk out to them and
we
their
know the
salaries
best fucking
went up with
the
gross
the country,
and was guaranteed,
you know?
Their contracts guaranteed their gross going up with the gross of the station, then they could see how it would happen, and they know and get weak.
Reports.
Paul said he'd come back anytime.
News department.
Paul,
okay.
People like Rudnick, Jerry, Danny.
Detroit.
There's just all kinds of possibilities.
All right, you've got
people in New York who have
been
fired from PLJ, and people in the West Coast who have been.
I mean, if it got to that, you know, we could get the best people in the country because it'd be the best station.
They don't want to do it.
All right, so you got the announcers and you got news people. How many news people are you going to want to have? Probably need two core people and then a couple of probably paid stringers. You want some people that just hang around the city all the time, give them $10 a week to phone you in whenever somebody shits, you know, and like that.
You wouldn't have to pay.
Right, you'd know it anyway.
Yeah,
okay. We're in touch with all that anyway. Yeah.
All right, so you got two news people.
You see, if you have two news people, then what you got is you'll have somebody on that. So you wouldn't be able to do it that you'd have a live news thing 24 hours a day. You wouldn't be able to do that.
I don't know if it's going to be possible to afford that kind of extravagance.
Yeah, it would have to be about 10 or 11.
Things happen during certain periods of the day. And if you had...
Good idea.
Yeah, people covering
I gotta pee in this stuff.
Anywhere from 12 to 18 hours of the day.
Right.
That would give you sufficient.
Then you'd also need time coverage. To be able to go out on the streets and stuff like that. Like, that's
then you get a lot of other people.
Because if they can't get out, yeah. You know,
but I think that anything beyond two core, you know, people you're going to pay a full salary and all that, might be an extravagance at this time.
And I think we could work it out so that those two people would be free at certain times during the week to go out and do features.
I gotta think an ideal time to have news coverage is ideally 7 in the morning. You gotta, you know, people, a lot of people like to be informed so they know what's going on when they head out for their day, you know.
A little
more confident that the world is still existing.
What's the listenership in the morning? A lot?
I mean, yeah, people going to work, people going to school,
in the morning,
their cars.
In the morning is traditionally the worst time of day for FM rockers.
Mm-hmm.
For every 1,000 people that listen to Danny or I in the afternoon, there were 50 or 100 that were listening to Hank.
That's, you know, if we shut the station down, that's the time
to
shut it down from 7 to 12.
Well.
Also means we don't have to
make papers. Anybody make papers?
Yeah.
Here's some right here in the ball. Got them already.
Really need to have a lot more access to doing things like features and street reporting than Cindy and Mike have been able to accomplish.
Yeah, I can get deep into coming up with ideas for news things.
Oh, really?
You know, they're just not done now.
Really?
Just we can make the news and information on the radio just so killer that people would just be falling out of their chair.
If I can make a good news, so
be far
I
out
the radio
in terms of politically or the government or anything like that. Just be
just good information.
Yeah. You know?
And specials, like one thing I pitched to this radio station was I was going to have one person whose sole job it was as an employee to be a... specials, organized specials. He'd bring other people in, you know, to help him on projects, like he, you know, but like for
special
instance,
events director.
We were going to do live shows once a month. Once a month, the special on, like we were going to have a special every Sunday night on something or something. We might have to expand the staff to actually get with that. Only start with two a month or something.
Do coverage, live coverage of all.
Yeah, live
concerts.
Shows. You could have concerts that were live, and the audience, you know, with different kinds of incentives, would get free tickets, and you have kegs of beer out there for them when they get there, and you have 300 people in the studio, and then it's broadcast live to the rest of everybody else. That's one thing.
Right, like ABC does it.
You go to Chicago and do a special on Chicago blues right in the bars, record it with great equipment, you know. Or jazz, you know, you could just keep doing specials
everything.
And people would be listening in, different people would be listening every day for different incentives. And the news, if you get the news so good, they just tuned in.
I don't think I turned a talk show thing like Hank was doing. You know,
caller thing is good. For
calling,
too long.
Boy, people just say,
right.
Just, you know, that's great stuff, you know.
You've got to get the base audience where you can do something like that. Mm-hmm. Once you got it, then everybody's super interested.
Yeah.
You can do a killer
show. Hank's show was on a pretty low level. You know, really interesting show.
That'd be so much fun.
We just use our whole
John
staff,
Weisman.
And just your staff and our staff, and we just blitz. Publicity wise, it'd be unheard of.
Really?
Billboards, posters, they're just.
What kinds of schemes?
That's what I was talking to Dets about in 69, if you remember, about doing a PR trip for ABX, you know.
Really opening.
Sending out press releases every week on all the little things they're doing. You build them up as the image of the station around the country as being, you know, just dynamite.
I have killer relations with Billboard magazine,
terribly
too.
Terribly frightened.
Yeah, I saw that little blurb in there.
I can get blurbs in Billboard now. There's one guy in there, Bob Gassenberg, and now I've always had good relations with him, was
he
able to pull an article
thing
when I wanted him. Yeah, he does the college thing, so that's how I originally, with his new idea, and he gave me a big article on that, then he gave me another follow-up feature on it, then he gave me this one. And he begs for information, because he's one of the two, he and Ed Oakes. One of the two dudes that are on Billboard that are worth anything at all.
They're still with him.
Yeah, that's amazingly good. Enough.
Yeah,
he's deep into radio too.
Is
this guy
on
Billboard? No, he's
what's the guy's name? The guy on Billboard?
Bob Gassenberg.
Glassenberg.
Gassenberg. Gassenberg.
That is Glass, isn't it?
That's Gassenberg.
I used to read his column the other week.
What's that one say up there? It doesn't say. But anyway, he's just begging for information. He called me down at Chrysler on the day of the show, and he said, "What the fuck? I had to hear it from Chef Gordon. You wouldn't even call me up."
Peter?
Kathy
Hoffer?
Oh, that's it.
Kathy Hoffer?
The Virgin Islands.
Right ahead.
Oh, Bill.
Gabby?
Why don't
you shut it
off? Well,
that's
all
I'm saying.
What do you have to say?
Absolutely.
Well,
we've been going to the park.
Yeah. You like these?
Oh, I like them all right.
I like them better than Marlboro.
That's far out.
Oh, you got cigarettes, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'm afraid.
I'm going to give you this bag, because I got a whole thing.
Which kind would you like?
Go watch.
So you don't want the cool?
No, I don't.
Do you inhale those yellow ones?
Yeah.
They're pretty strong, aren't they?
Yeah. I inhale cigars. I'm trying not to smoke so many cigarettes, but while I'm talking, I have this incredible urge to stuff things into my mouth, you know.
Did you start in cigarettes and then move into heavier cigarettes and then cigars?
Yeah, I used to smoke Cools, and then I quit. When I was in the penitentiary, I quit for a while, and then when I started smoking again, I started smoking a lot of Strikes. So I smoked them, but I was thinking about these, and then when I got out, I just started. I got a few packs of these from smoking, and then I got them smoking little cigars and Tijuana Smalls and cigarette Tipperillos and shit like that. But if I don't have any of those, then I smoke. The stronger, you don't smoke as many, you know.
I don't know.
I mean, that's my experience. Just like these things. These things, you light them and they go out and smoke one of them for a long time.
That's good when they go out.
Yeah.
Really pisses me off about the cigarette industry. They make the cigarettes so that they just keep burning all the way down.
Sure. Good idea. I wish they made cigarettes that were about this long. About half that size.
Really? Why?
Well, because then we wanted to. They had a nicotine. I don't like smoke, you know.
Yeah.
The less the better, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of times you just want to light one up and dig into your hips. You want to throw it away, but you feel bad throwing away the whole cigarette.
Right. Got him.
So Danny's handed in his notice, see? Danny's handed in his notice?
I don't know, has he?
That's what somebody told me. You don't know?
You don't know officially, or you just don't know?
No, I don't.
Yeah, he's supposed to have handed in his notice effective the end of February. He's looking for something else.
Well,
Yeah, I mean, I know he's looking, I know he wants to get out, but...
What he said, say he'd taken the step to force, evidently to force himself to change his situation.
That's probably what I should...